It's the Benz Brunani womaness. Baby boys, baby girls, you need to hear this. If you sit down, receive this realness. Make sure your cup's ready for the tea, we are go sipping yo. Hard time scrolling for your long shorts. You might learn something you never know. Could let you find, and she's one of a kind. Don't say you're mine, say you're mine.
Singing, rapping girl flex, baby girl 2.0. Let's go. Scoffed at my acorn era, didn't think I'd be the oak. So before you assume and talk crud, it's probably best you choke. God's favourite, under angels' wings, is prophesied as my haven. Blessed to serve up what you lot have clearly been craving. It's your tongue, go crazy, but bear this in mind, baby. Raise it on a minus and it has to fall, and that's on God who made me. Powerful on my knees, geez, I mean, I pray with conviction. Ancestral truths flow from me, and yet I've mastered diction. Can you hear them when they sing for me? The ancestors make sure blessings bling for me. Steps guided so I never falter. Ever humbled when they meet me at the altar.
I believe that children are a future. Teach them well and let them lead the way. Show them all the beauty they possess inside. Give them a sense of pride.
I'm back. No, I'm not. Not really. I am not back. But why am I here? Well, I'm here because I did an interview with George the Poet. That sounds like I'm about to drag somebody. I'm not. Actually, let me introduce myself properly, because Mondays have not been the same without your girl. Okay. Now you see the difference. When your girl is not in the mainstream Monday streets, you can feel the difference. Innit? I've got to be quick anyway. Before I start yapping, I've actually got to get to yoga class. But yes, it's me, Kelechi, the baby girl in the blood clot place to be. You see it? And this is not actually SYM, officially known as Say Your Mind, unofficially known as what? That's right, suck your mom. It's not that. It's actually Meet Me at the Altar episode. So that's why if you're watching this on YouTube, my backdrop looks different, because it's the altar space now. And I've just come through because I wanted to share an interview that I did with George the Poet weeks ago. So this has been on Meet Me at the Altar on the Kaleidoscope members area on my website, KelechiOkafor.com. This interview has actually been on there for a minute. And I thought that, you know what? Every once in a while, who knows the day or the time, I will appear like a thief in the night before Jesus and drop some of my real faves in terms of interviews that I've been doing and bits that I've been doing for Kaleidoscope. But yeah, if you want to get into the things straight away, you can join me on KelechiOkafor.com and join the Kaleidoscope members area. There's a chat forum there now, so people can, you know, chat and start their own topics. It's like the infamous websites, the infamous kind of chat forum websites, but obviously not toxic and nasty. So you can, and you can private message each other, you could do your thing, but you know, and I'm always watching, always like big sister, not watching people's messages, but just making sure nobody moves mad. But nobody would, because I only rock with the people with the best vibes. So I thought, let me give you this George the Poet interview, simply because I'm a bit gassed. You know, like when you do something and you know you've done it well, everyone that's been commenting and sending me messages through Kaleidoscope to say that they like this interview is one of the best that I've ever done. And I'm like, you know what? Let my enemies also hear it. Let my rascal enemies also hear it, because I'm that fucking girl, you nuts. So it'll be titled the same way as it's titled on the Meet Me at the Altar, the new podcast called Meet Me at the Altar. It's titled in the same way, George the Chef, because when I tell you he cooked on this book, So the book is called Track Record, Me, Music, and the War on Blackness is the title of the book. It's out now because obviously I did this interview weeks ago and recorded it weeks before. Well, I posted this interview weeks ago and I recorded it weeks before that. And I know that since then, I know that some of you were messaging or tagging George because he did an interview with Novara Media and you were like, Novara Media were horrible to Kelechi, rah, 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 rah. But we actually did our interview, myself and George, before that. And not everybody knows that Novara Media are pussyclarts, you know? But that's by the by. I don't care about that. I care about this book, though. When I say, like, there are so many reasons that I fuck with George. Like, in terms of just, like, we don't know each other personally, so I also need to add that as a caveat. But in terms of, like, what I see of his public persona and how he appears, he stands for a lot. He stands for a lot of things, and he stands with conviction, and yet he's still able to navigate spaces and do the things that he wants to do. His podcast has won numerous awards. You know, like, he's done various things. He's a talented man, and he's a man that has, you know, integrity as to how he navigates the this industry. So, for instance, turning down his MBE and giving the reason why. So I'm still flabbergasted. I'm still confounded when I see you lot accepting and becoming baronesses and ladies. But if that's what would make your ancestors proud, you go and you do your thing, innit? But this book, super well researched, because we know George is super smart, but he doesn't, the book is so accessible, it doesn't come through in a condescending way. And like, our interview just slapped. Like, you know when two brilliant, smart black people get together who know how to catch a joke, know how to catch a vibe? It's magical. And I wanted people to everywhere to experience that magic. And you, if you know that we're no longer working together and you're listening to this, God punish you, get off my fucking podcast now, dickhead. Sorry. I just need to get that in there because people were really trying to troll using burner accounts to try and troll the podcast after the live show. And to me, it was just really, really disgusting to see that people can try and work closely with you, feel like they know you, and then try to write crap that would that they hope would undermine the work that you built. Nobody in this life, because I know that my heart is pure, my heart is clean, nobody in this life will ever try and talk down on what I've achieved, because none of you, so many of you that try it, that try to come for me, none of you could do what I do on your best day. And may God punish you, and may everything that you try to do henceforth, may it crumble, you fucking cunts, to think that you can then use proximity to me to then try and spread, like, it will never ever be well with you. And until you do right, all you do is go wrong. Until you do right by me, all you do is go wrong. Because who the fuck, how the fuck dare you? Let me not even come off subject, because I came on here with good vibes. And I still need to get to yoga to realign my chakras, clearly. But also, big up all of the students that are protesting. Big up all of the people who are protesting. The uprising is doing wonders. It's a shame about America, but I did tell you in those tarot readings that America will look very, very different in 2025. A lot of the world will look very, very different in 2025. I sound like I'm rushing. God damn it. And what else? The revolution will not be televised because some people are trying to have it monetized. Ooh, Kelechi, you ate. But no, the revolution won't be televised because Murdoch owns a lot of the media. So when these rich, powerful, usually white people, but just rich, powerful people own the media, they won't televise the revolution. They'll try not to televise the revolution anyway. I'm seeing Five of Wands here, conflict, especially just because I had to tell people about themselves just a few moments ago. But that's why social media, even though we know that this is also owned, it's important for us to be able to share as much knowledge as we can when we see people in different aspects, in different places in the world, sharing their the uprisings going on in their countries because they're fighting for what they what's theirs. It's interesting that, what is it, forgive me if I get these stats wrong, but in South Africa, I believe 74% of the land is owned by white people who make up 4% of the population. So don't tell me, I'm from South Africa, so I don't give a fuck, colonizer. I don't give a fuck. Yeah. Anyway, before we get into George's episode with me, I thought, let me pull some cards because I wanted to say this. Like, I do cord cutting exercises regularly, especially because I do so many tarot readings for people. Okay, I'm about to come off on a tangent again. Tarot, no, let me finish this one. I do so many cord cutting exercises because I do so many tarot readings and divinations for people. So I need to not stay attached to their energy once I finish reading. But it's so interesting that I kept being pulled, like literally I felt it like I was being pulled by my belly button to record this episode. Or this opening to the episode that I did with George and put it out there. And I don't know who it's for, who isn't on Kaleidoscope, because quite a few of you are on there, but it's like it's an energy, or maybe it was because it was more than one type of energy was pulling me to come here and drop this. Don't think that this is going to be a regular thing, because it absolutely will not. This particular interview just slaps severely. That's why it's coming out in this way. But maybe I was also brought here because there's a message through the tarot that needs to be delivered as well. And I'm excited to say that I've also added new services to my website. So apart from my tarot readings, the one-to-one tarot readings that are £111, I've also added, like I said, well, I've got the one question tarot readings, which you know about. So you can ask one question, that's £22. And then I respond to you with an audio file, like an MP3 reading that's about 5 minutes long, and or you can get an express tarot reading that's £66. So I send that to you within 24 hours. The one that's £22, I send within 7 days. And now I've added pendulum readings because your girl is getting very good at pendulum readings. It's just another way for me to channel my energy. So I've got a pendulum. It's a really beautiful one. And depending on the yes, no question that you ask me, the pendulum will swing a particular way. And I'll literally message you back yes or no to the question that you've asked. And that's £5.55. So £5.55. So for those who probably feel like, you know, they're on a budget, they can't afford too much, and they really want a reading, you can get that one for £5.55. But what is the message that is needed for the collective? Why have I been brought here today to post George's interview, of all the interviews I've done, post George's interview as well as give this reading? What do people need to know right now? What is it that they're trying to hear? I've also got pick apart readings now on the Kaleidoscope site as well in the members area. So I'm posting pick apart videos where you can train your own intuition so you can pick the card that most resonates for you. The deck I'm using for today is the Kaleidodope deck by Crystal Banner. Yeah, by Crystal Banner. This is one of my first sort of like fancy decks. So let's see what we've got here. Seven of Swords. Oh, Chariot. Six of Cups. Nine of Swords. 10 of Cups. It's funny, really. And I felt like not my outburst, but the thing I felt like I said earlier about, it's not just people who try to move mad once they've had some kind of proximity to me, but it's just general energy for so many of us right now that there's a lot of deception around, because we've got the Seven of Swords, which speaks to deception. So it's depicted in this Kaleidodope deck as a balaclava with seven sort of like arrows around it. So some of you might be surrounded by deception, or you're perpetrating, you know. And we've got the Chariot card here, which is shown as like a red Ferrari. So I don't know if Lewis Hamilton's listening, but maybe check what's happening with Ferrari and your contract in 2025. Make sure there's no dodginess there because of how the season's going. So we've got that, and then we've got the Six of Cups in reverse. And it's, I think, has Mercury just gone into Cancer? And Cups, Cancer is a water sign, and the cups represent the water. The way that it's depicted in the Kaleidodope deck, we've got, you know, those cans that people would use to try and communicate with each other. Funnily enough, Lev has this Paw Patrol, you know, those, what are they, you know, those controllers, you know what I mean? Those, you know, the, it'll come to me later, but you know, the one, two, you know what I'm saying, you're probably all shouting it right now, but he's got one of them anyway. And then the other day, I didn't even think the frequency was that far, but his a thing got, his walkie-talkie, that's the one, got intercepted, and he was getting some message from somewhere far, far away, like a few like miles over, a couple of miles over. Very weird. But watch your children's toys, please. So anyway, we've got Six of Cups, then we've got Nine of Swords. So some of you are anxious about a reconciliation. You're anxious about giving an apology. And Ten of Cups says that it is something that you should do. And this also applies on a geopolitical level as well. We've got the Ten of Cups. This also applies on a geopolitical level as well. Sometimes you go so far with doing wrong that, you know, when Macbeth said, you know, I've waded too far. You know what Macbeth said when he was speaking to Lady Macbeth, and he was like, babes, I've duppied enough people. It's a bit too late for me to try and come back from that now. But it runs them both mad is the thing, innit? Well, he gets killed. Well, she dies as well. But you get what I mean? Like, they both end up 6 feet under because they didn't do. And that's why we see the Six of Cups as well. Because they didn't do what they needed to do. And not to say that anybody's going to physically die, but it's the fact that every day that you are withholding, rebalancing the things in your life is another day lost in living as your authentic self and enjoying true fulfillment, emotional fulfillment, because the anxiety eats people up. And I feel like that's why, me personally, I know that my sleeping pattern is shagged because of my deadlines, my writing deadlines. But ultimately, I say this with all like humility, I can sleep very easy when I do manage to get to sleep. I can sleep very easy knowing that there aren't many people in this life that can say that I've wronged them, right? If you don't look for my trouble, you will not find it, right? So for me, and even when you do look for my trouble, from where I've gotten to now, I just try to move with more grace. I try to move with more Jenny San Kwan. Also, totally unrelated, but 0.5 grams of psilocybin isn't conducive for a run. It, like, I feel like, because you know psilocybin and magic mushrooms generally is about stillness, right? Plant medicine in that regard is about stillness. Now, when you're trying to run on 0.5, 0.2 grams, sweet spot, absolute sweet spot. So I've heard, but 0.5, after a while, you then get the energy to keep moving, but you don't want to, you're not running with kind of a purpose anymore, if you go, I mean, you just start kind of moving. But then the moment you stop, oh, you then go into kind of like a deep space of like tranquility and everything else. So I've heard. But for those who are maybe thinking of like how they use psilocybin and microdose, I would say you could still pretty much do the exercises that require a higher heart rate on 0.2 grams, but maybe not 0.5. That requires more stillness. But I could be wrong. There are people who probably have different tolerances and they'll tell you differently. But back to this reading, until you do right, all you'll do is go wrong. It's a very strong message here. And we see it, like I said, on a political level as well, because these, the powers that be, they're not doing what they need to do. America refuses to do right. Israel Netanyahu refuses to do right. And it's almost like, well, we've already come this far. Why would we stop now? And why, oh, thank you, Spirit. Why some people might be scared to turn back from their deeds is because they're scared of being in that space of vulnerability, geopolitically, that vulnerability of the fact that you've accepted that you are in the wrong now. So what are you going to do to make up for it? And also, you feel like it potentially opens you up to retaliation. And on an interpersonal level, people might be scared to admit that, you know what, I actually did fuck up there. It was my jealousy that made me not do certain things. And instead of accepting that, I'm starting to create a narrative that is not true about this situation. Start telling the truth to yourself, because every day you don't tell the truth is another day that you've lost of living anyway. So that is a death in and of itself. Choose life. Choose truth and choose life. Wherever you know that you need to make amends. And I feel like also this is some people, you know, they're worrying about their health currently as well. some people, it's you're needing to make up with children. I'm looking at that Six of Cups. You're needing to make up with children because maybe when in your younger years, you weren't really parenting the way that you needed to. And Father's Day would have woken a lot of you up. Or some of you, Father's Day showed you where your wounds are and why you behave the way that you do and why you are anxious about finding yourself in committed relationships, fulfilling relationships because of the things that happened during childhood, anger that you might not have processed. And you know, we are entering Cancer season, June 20th? And so that's depicted by the Chariot card here as well. So I feel like also, I don't know if it pertains to the royal family maybe even, but things from the past might come up around maybe the 7th of July. 7th of July, maybe. But what I'm thinking is, like, there is a reason that we've been, or 6th or 7th of July, but what we're being shown here, and that might be for some of you personally as well, do the things that you need to do because nobody knows tomorrow. And the no empires last, not even the empire of your own ego. Every empire crumbles. So a lot of these, I was thinking about the monarchy when I said those dates. So there's something about that as well coming to the fore, the deception, how we've been deceived regarding something to do with the monarchy might be revealed. I don't know. But there's a lot of energy and for something. And for some of you, if it's a question about timing, I just got 9 months. Don't know who that's for. But anyway, I feel like I've said enough. I just wanted to do that quick intro. There won't be an outro because I'm up out of this hoe. But I hope you enjoy this wonderful, wonderful chat with George the Poet. Okay, catch you on the flip side, literally. Peace. George. Like, I feel like I understand that we call you George the Poet, but I feel we should call you George the Chef.
You cooked. Okay. All right. I'll take it. Sorry, Raekwon. I'm the chef now.
Mm-hmm. I was just like, the PhD is really PhDing. I mean, like, the level of like research clearly that's gone into all of this is a lot, and it's very different. Your book is very different, like track record is very different to any other like autobiography I've interacted with, because it's not, it's about, I guess, well, I'm telling you what it's about, but it's about your life. But then it's like, we've got a zoomed out sort of lens. And I think like in one of the chapters, you talk about zooming out and like looking at how the personal is political and how the interconnectedness of what we call our individual experience as well as like the Black experience, right? And so I wanted to kind of delve into that with you because it's you talk about it later on in the book, but there's this, I'm so excited to talk to someone where you're able to take a particular type of knowledge and transpose it in a manner that is readily accessible and relatable. I'm just super excited. I haven't been this excited for so long. So, Will, I feel like...
Will.
I feel like Will... anchors this story in a way that to me it makes sense, and I feel like it makes sense for lots of people. But in terms of the creative aspect, how did you hone in and say like, this is how I'm going to begin this story from, or to you know, begin sharing my experiences and take the reader on this journey through your life based on this one party?
All right, well, for anyone that doesn't know, Will is a person that everyone's not going to know yet, but Will is a person I interacted with at a party where I'm speaking to two women of African descent. One was Caribbean, one was someone who had grown up on the continent. And we're talking about the Black condition in this country in general. We've all had different experiences of blackness. I grew up in the black community, the working class black community of Northwest. And one of the sisters didn't really grow up in the black community, but grew up, you know, obviously in Britain, in a middle class African family. And another one grew up middle class in Nigeria. So we're all talking about blackness in different ways. It's quite a nuanced conversation. And then one of the sisters' husband comes over. Now he's a white man. And without asking us what we're talking about, or without asking us, you know, for a bit more information on what we're saying, he kind of dictates his view on the black condition. And it is very much black people don't know how good they've got it. There are so many black people achieving. Why when we talk about black people, do we just focus on sad, bad stuff and very superficial, entry level, liberal, I mean, well, this is how I think I could help, maybe by changing your perspective vibes. And it was jarring, to say the least. It was jarring. So I let him slide for about 3 minutes. I was like, I don't need, this is a party. We don't need to get into this. And he has said that he's a fan of mine, whatever, whatever. I don't really want to go there. But eventually I kind of just back him up a little bit and be like, yo, you're out of pocket. You know, there are some things you need to consider when you discuss blackness, regardless of you being in an interracial relationship. So when I was writing the book, I had started off with the autobiographical stuff. Halfway through, I was kind of like, this isn't enough. What's going on in the world requires a broader conversation than just another celebrity saying, this is how I made it. Mm-hmm. So let me try and find a connector where I can show you something that happened in my life, because people are interested in personal stories.
Yes.
Something recent that just encapsulates how much more work there is to do to normalize a certain level of understanding with regards to the black condition.
Mm. And I feel like that's where you're, you know, because you're revered when, you know, we think about your intellectual prowess, your lyricism, just your talent overall, and your sense of conviction as well is something that has been very, you know, at the forefront of your career, well, as I've seen it throughout the years. And so when I looked at the structure that you chose in order to kind of deliver this and take us on this journey, to me it made perfect sense, because there was this idea that, well, the way that I see it, I feel like you're a rather private person when it comes to like your personal life, right? So then somebody says, write an autobiography. It's like, well, I don't want you lot in my business like that. So,
very true.
So I want to, and I feel like I relate, because it's like, I want to share with you what I think. And also, I guess, part of who I am, but do you know what I mean? It's what you say about like that whole kind of like celebrity autobiography, where it's just like, oh, this is me, this is who I am. It's like, well, I don't want you in my life in that way, but I want to share with you what shaped my life.
And going back to what you said, the personal is political. So even when you present on social media as, look how patterned I am, look how well things are going, there's a politics behind that that kind of undermines other important conversations.
Yeah. And I feel like that's what I'm finding attention with currently, with everything that's happening in the world. And it has been happening, fair enough, right? Mm-hmm. But you know that when it becomes more pertinent and you're seeing things playing out, and then it seems like other people are able to kind of like continue with the kind of social contract, I guess, that there is with social media, and they're delivering the things that's expected, and you're like, no, this is not making sense. Like, everything is refracted. Like, what is going on? So, and so I love that you bring us in that way. And one of the things that stands out to me first and foremost is paying homage, or homage, whichever you prefer, right? Where you start talking about kind of overlap or the evolution with hip hop as well as grime, and how all of these things informed how then you went to kind of do the work and create the work that you've kind of given to us over the years. And you mention about this idea of individualism, and I wanted to kind of touch on that a little bit. The danger of it, the danger of being self-made, the danger of being the first, when actually we are all a product of something. People came before us, and that's why we're able to be here.
Facts, facts. Shouts out to Malcolm Gladwell, because his book Outliers was the first one that really made me think about this. Mm. In Outliers, Gladwell gives just a different view on success and the self-made myth than anything I had heard before I read that book. He says that, you know, a lot of it is conditional, environmental. There are all sorts of invisible factors as to why, for example, he gives the example of Bill Gates, Steve Jobs, and a man called Bill Joy, giants of the computing era that they came from. And he points out they were all born in 1955. They all had early access to computers via their parents. And they were all in a certain region in the West Coast, the San Francisco kind of area, when it was popping off in terms of computing revolutions. And you know what, Kelechi? I realized that about Jay-Z, everyone's mate Diddy, Brother Love, and I think there's someone else that fits that. They were all born in a certain window. I think Master P or one of those guys. Mm-hmm. They were all born like end of 1969, and they matured or they hit adulthood at a point in hip hop where they were able to become what they went on to become. And I see that in our wave of Gram, the first wave, where Skepta and these guys ended up, you know, getting to a certain point by a certain point. So you realize that we go through things generationally and regionally. So it doesn't really make sense for me to talk about my life without acknowledging that I am part of a generational drift.
And what would you say then? I mean, I kind of would guess, but what would you say then is the motivation for kind of socializing us to think in this way, that, well, it's just me. Like, I did it regardless of what everybody else has going on. It's me.
And this is where we got to zoom out, sis, because ultimately what I find is that the majority of our time, our values, our motivations are shaped by our economic system. Mm. Our system is a capitalist one. And capitalism is based on certain theories. There's a book behind me right here. Look at this. Mm-hmm. Wealth of Nations is one of the Bibles of capitalism. And in Wealth of Nations, this guy, over 100 and whatever years ago, 100, coming up to about 200 years ago, he just kind of puts out some theories about why capitalism works in the way it does. Now, a lot of what he said is gold, Adam Smith. A lot of what he said is, you know, a very serious analysis of the system that we have today. But a lot of it is myth. A lot of it is like, oh, individuals make good choices and this leads to a healthy market and blah, 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 blah. Yeah, so today we're dealing with a lot of these myths, this system that tells itself that it is good for us because it only provides what people buy, what people want, and people want what they want. Mm. We know that because they spend money on it. And what I have come to understand over the years is that a lot of what we want, a lot of what we value, a lot of what we prioritize is down to manipulation. It's down to conditioning that allows the world to continue in the way that it does without challenging the underlying power dynamics.
Yeah. Oof, that's the word. And I feel like that is it. I was doing a talk the other day and a white man in the audience put his hand up and, you know, to say, well, I get everything that you're saying, but like how these systems have been here. And so I just don't see how we as individuals can change that. And I was like, well, the system, there was a point when the system wasn't here. You know, everything that we see, it was put here. Like, so it can also be unput here. Like we can take it away. And why is that so hard to fathom?
Facts. Facts. But yeah, there's a vested interest in trying to make the system appear as nature. Human beings are just like this. We're going to fight because everyone would colonize everyone else if they had the chance. Really?
Swear down. That's the faith. Well, it was happening for centuries. Okay, fine. Mm-hmm. And then I love there are many draggings in this book, and that's my favorite. I love an intellectual drag. I was like, yes, flog. You said,
I blacked out, man. I can't even remember. Go on.
You said, there is a political context to the story I've told so far. My parents didn't just arrive in British public housing out of nowhere, and nor did the rest of St. Ralph's. Our stories began in parts of the world that got sucked into the British Empire. The disastrous consequences of this entanglement forced our parents and grandparents to migrate throughout the 1900s. By the middle of the century, the empire was being rebranded as the Commonwealth in an effort to make colonialism seem consensual and mutually beneficial. And I feel like you managed there what might seem obvious to, I guess, a lot of academics and intellectuals. You managed to explain there a frustration that some people might feel about the Commonwealth that they are not able to articulate, that it's a rebranding of something that actually isn't mutually beneficial. So why do we continue to participate?
Thank you for acknowledging that work. I think there's so much trickery, and the majority of what we hear about the empire and the Commonwealth comes through media and through education in our early lives. Now, you might end up in circles where they talk about these things a lot, but being an adult in this country does not require you to know any of this. Mm-hmm. Doesn't require you to know when the empire started, when it ended, how it transitioned into Commonwealth, what difference Commonwealth is supposed to represent from the preceding order. So this is actually, if you're from a country that was affected by the British Empire, this is crucial information. And if you're the kind of person that would accept, for example, an MBE, an OBE, this is crucial information to frame your decision. So that when the word empire is stamped after your name for the rest of your career, life, whatever, you understand what you're participating in. It's been my mission throughout my work to just normalize this stuff, normalize the conversation, not make it feel like you have to go and get a degree before you can engage on Twitter. A lot of this is just factual stuff that happened that nowadays this new generation can explain in a quick TikTok. But for those that might not be on TikTok, here's the backstory.
Yeah, and I think that when you touch on that, I'm just finding the page, where you talk about the... literally what you say there about the language, about making it accessible to people. Even when you mention about the Hood documentary and Kayode's work as well, there is something really, really powerful about being able to say, I've accessed this, I've gone and done the reading on this, I've gone to do the research on this, but that doesn't make me better than you. I can't move from a self-righteous perspective if I want to dismantle the hierarchical structures that we know. So therefore, I've got to give you this information in a way that makes it easier to take in. So I love when you even talk about Link Up TV and Rashid, and there would be the assumption that somebody who's risen to where you've risen to and doing the work that you do, that there, you know, that there's this weird dichotomy that you're over here, you know, doing super smart stuff, and then Link Up TV is over here and doing the, but what we see is that there's a symbiosis, like there is an ecosystem where we do actually all need each other in order for that liberation that we so claim to want, for it to be realized.
Facts on facts. Thank you for drawing out these aspects of the story, because I talk about so much stuff, I don't even know what direction to take a conversation in. Rashid, I was there. I was in his yard when he told me I'm coming up with this thing called Link Up TV. He was actually telling me, because I was a rapper at the time, and he wanted a freestyle for his new channel. I talk about Rashid a little bit in the book, because as like a big bro to me, he was always influential in advising me to go to local radio, advising me to combine the poetry with music, linking me up with Emmanuel Stanley's, and putting me on Link Up TV and giving me my first viral moment. Now, he's not qualified in the way that I'm qualified. He didn't go to uni, I don't think. I remember him being in college being like, I think I'm just going to do this Link Up TV thing. I left RAFS. I left him behind in our neighborhood, and I went to Cambridge yet I still came back and needed him. Mm-hmm. You know, he's never, even though he kind of needed me in the way that he needs every artist, and he invited me on his platform. You'd be surprised about the symbiosis. That word is perfect for it. I love talking to you about this. It's perfect for it.
No, because that's what, you know, I found so, like, engaging about reading your book. It's just like, finally, because it just sits like at this apex that I feel like we've been missing. You know, lots of incredible work has been coming through from so many different people, but it's like we needed this thing to kind of like tie the conversation together. And it was the mentioning or the mention of like taking us through the history of grime. Like, you put in history lessons, you put in so many things that don't feel preachy. What you're doing, as you say throughout the book, is giving context. And without context, like, what are we? Who are we? If we don't know ourselves, if we don't know the larger story, like you could talk about, of course, in the structure or in the sense of poetry, right? So you've taken out this stanza. You only understand that stanza. You don't actually understand what's happening everywhere else. It's like you're taking us through, well, this is what the whole narrative is. And so this is where I fit into the whole thing. So you know, when you're talking about the your experience with Rashid, talking about BFM, Sifa, all of these people, even when you're talking about your sociology, is your sociology teacher and watching The Wire. Mm-hmm. I said, that is the school I should have gone to.
She was forward thinking, and bless her, she was like 24 at the time. But again, you know, just paying attention to the people around you, you never know. You never know.
Yeah. Mm. But, and also what struck me is how many women have informed your journey and have been a part of your journey. And you recognize that within this journey that you take us on. And I think that that's important, because often Black women, or just women of color generally, but Black women are often left out of the success stories, or they're made out like mere kind of side characters. But here you are highlighting how influential these different women have been to helping you to realize what it is, or who it is, that we feel like we see before us.
Thank you. Thank you, man. Thanks for letting me know that from your perspective as well, because there have been points in the writing where I'm like talking about political events, and I'm talking about times in the world where, yeah, politics were dominated by men. And I'm kind of concerned that the narrative, just because I'm trying to tell an episode in history, the narrative becomes very male dominated. And that is dangerous. We're not just virtue signaling. This is not identity politics. It is dangerous because it creates blind spots when you don't account for 50% of the population in that context. And, you know, marginalized voices in general.
Yeah. And I think you do it well, because the fact of the matter is you can't just invent world leaders that weren't there. So if you're talking about that's what it is, then that's what it is, right? But then in your personal experience, you sharing, you know, your journey along the way, even in the inclusion of your wife as well, and that whole, you know, when we get to near the end of the book, really looking at how then fatherhood then becomes another context that you're then exploring. But before we go on to that, I wanted to touch on Gaddafi. Why do you feel like... Imagine just touch on Gaddafi.
That's a zoom out, zoom in. I like it. Go ahead. That's my kind of talk. Let's go.
Why do you feel, obviously through reading the book, but wanting to explore with you more, why do you think that we have such a skewed perspective or perception of Gaddafi in the Western world? Because if you had asked me before I went and did my readings and my learnings, same as what you talk about here in the book, it was like, well, he's a dictator. Well, yeah. Until I started reading more, and I was like, wait a minute. Not that there can't be multiple things that are true at the same time.
100%.
But it feels like the interest that these imperial states have in him, or the distrust or distaste and the dislike they have for him, it's not for the same reason that the average Libyan might have for this whole dynamic.
I think the reason that the two main reasons I would give for how twisted we get it when it comes to Gaddafi. Number one, we don't know what independence actually looks like.
Oh, well, there's that.
Right. We're conditioned to not recognize it and to see it as wrong when someone of the wrong skin color exercises autonomy. Also, I have to constantly hold space and give grace to the fact that we are a heavily propagandized people.
Yeah.
Everyone.
Yeah.
If you haven't had the chance, if you haven't had the space in your life to get to the bottom of certain fundamental narratives about what happened in the past 50 years, 500 years, then chances are you've absorbed a lot of very damaging media.
Mm.
And you don't realize. I mean, I remember being young and being like, it's kind of weird how all the Bond villains have a Russian accent.
Yeah.
And just running with that for like the rest of my life up to a certain point, just thinking, oh, Russians are bookie. There must be something about Russians. Yeah, the last place I want to go is Russia.
Yeah.
But I didn't think of it as Cold War propaganda.
Yeah.
Right? So when it comes to Gaddafi, to only ever hear about dictatorship, someone being in power for a long time, necessarily meaning that that person is an enemy to me personally, not understanding about his imperial context. And what I mean by that, for anyone who don't know, is the fact that he was facing aggression from the West, that the West was constantly interfering in Africa with under the guise of African puppet leaders who will make all sorts of anti-African decisions. Not understanding what it means to have to be in control of a country in which you run the natural resources, you as the indigenous people decide what happens with Libyan oil, and you institute a policy where we support our people with this oil money. We don't beg, we don't take aid, we don't rate you lot. If we see any untoward military activity or political activity in our region, we're going to get involved. We're going to get involved, and you might like it, you might not, but we are operating under our own rules. We've all been conditioned to look at that as madness.
Yes.
But it's a lot more complicated. And the reason I include Gaddafi in this book about my story is because I was in Cambridge when the West invaded Libya. And for a long time after that, I had no idea what that was all about, really. I didn't understand that Gaddafi was angling towards creating an African currency that would make the euro redundant, that would make the dollar redundant. I didn't realize that currency, aside from military force, is one of the greatest weapons that the West has over the global South. And Gaddafi, what he stood for and eventually what he died for, is a very important case study for all of us formerly colonized peoples in understanding who we're really dealing with in this Western world.
Yeah. And you put it so perfectly there in such a, in here as we're having this conversation, but also within the book, you know, talking about, is it the gold dinner, and saying like, you know, what would it mean for us? What would it mean for the African continent? Formerly colonized states to be like, yeah, boom, this is our collective currency. And this is, and so we are therefore going to have a major impact on the global economy. Like we're going to be in that conversation. It's like, no, you're not, because we've been putting, as you say, puppet leaders in. No. You're not doing that. And I guess the way that then it puts people off. And then when you mentioned there about like us truly understanding the kind of monster that we are up against, when we think about all of this stuff, when you then started talking about hip hop and the CIA, well, music and the CIA, right? And informants. And I don't say this lightly, but I feel like there's a way that you've kind of, the trajectory of your career where you, to me, are clearly a visionary. Some might call it a sort of prophecy, but you wrote this whilst, you know, you and your wife were expecting your son, you're doing all of these things, you're just writing and writing. But then we've come to a point where informants are going to be super important in pop culture currently, and the cases that are about to play out as well. And then do we still revere the, you know, the hip hop archetypes and the, you know, the big players? Do we still will we still revere them in the same way when we start seeing how interlinked everybody is within the kind of hyper surveillance? Yeah, in terms of the hyper surveilling forces. But could you talk to us about that, the shock that you felt when you realized certain people were informants?
Yeah, man. I actually, I blacked out when I wrote this book because
you're like, really? You were cooking. You were cooking. The fumes from the cooking. You just.
I hear it. I just. Hip hop informants. Madness. Where do you even go with that? Ultimately, I was thinking this morning about how we are gaslit with regards to conspiracy. Yeah. And this morning I was just thinking how conspiracy literally kind of means plan, a group of people planning.
Yeah.
That's not that wild. It's not that wild to imagine that some of the stuff that we see in the media is part of planned operations. I watched the Nickelodeon documentary, Quiet on Set. Madness.
Wow.
Growing up, we watched Nickelodeon and we just took it at face value.
Yeah.
Some kids living the life, having fun. Not only to realize that there are concerted efforts behind these media images to do very nasty things. You're not crazy for thinking that. This is the evidence. This is what the evidence consistently points to. So I do believe, firstly, that the incoming generation, remember I said at the start, generational drift, none of us forms our life in isolation. We're all influenced by each other.
Yeah.
I do think that for our generation, it may be difficult for certain people. I've talked about this in a lot of interviews, but everyone's been losing their mind about Kendrick, Cole and Drake.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a certain generation that will always see Kendrick as a powerful voice,
mm-hmm.
right? I've been part of that generation. And to me, he was powerful at one point. Kendrick is a good example of the limits. Like,
yes.
So what Kendrick won't do is talk about empire. What Kendrick will not do is talk about, the economic alternatives to what Black America is facing and oppressed people in general. So Kendrick is a bad boy within the rules of hip hop. If you within everyone that goes to the studio and stands in the booth and shouts into a microphone, he's a bad boy.
Yes.
In terms of being on the front line, being outside, I don't see him like that. And I think there's a certain generation that will struggle with that. Mm-hmm. The new generation, I don't think, are going for it.
No.
I don't think the incoming generation are going to be as easily impressed by celebrity and trickery as we were.
Absolutely. And I think and that's something I've been really focused on recently, how the cult of celebrity is crumbling. Thus, the monarchy, as in the British monarchy, is falling apart right behind before our eyes. And it needs to, in order for people to engage with different manners, for instance, of self-sovereignty. And then how does the individual that knows themselves, how do they offer themselves, or how do they become of service to the collective? But you can't be of service to the collective if you don't even know who you are and what you're bringing to the collective, right? And so all these distractions with celebrities have been a way for us to displace our sense of power. Yeah. And then we're now coming back to it. And so all of these cases that are happening and we're finding out all of these things, even how technology and AI can be used and manipulated in order to manipulate us. I'm finding all of that interesting as well, and how things are playing out in the media. I'm fascinated. It's not something that really scares me. I'm just intrigued because I feel like with everything, we adapt and we learn. But I feel like Kendrick is a great example, and there are others, where people can use seemingly revolutionary language, but they're not revolutionary people, or there is a limit to how much they are willing to participate in changing certain things. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it really, really kind of unnerved me to think about people who are seen and revered within hip hop being FBI informants, being CIA informants, and how then the music industry, as you talk about in the book as well, moves away from being art, and then it's just profit. Profit mm-hmm. is what we're focusing on. Thus, it then becomes another tenet of capitalism.
Yeah. So with regards to capitalism, I'm still doing all of my investigations. I've heard there's a strand of thought that is like the way capitalism operates currently is not all capitalism can be. Okay. And I'm curious in terms of the global South, China, what the future of capitalism will look like.
Yes.
If there are transitional stages we can go through that require less devastation, effery, all of that.
Yeah.
However, this capitalism that we have today, I have come to see it as what's the word? Just a group of cartels.
Yeah.
Like an agreement between a few gangsters that have set up shop around the world in different ways. Now, when it comes to the music industry, I feel like the number one currency is propaganda.
Yes.
If you, as a woman, as a black woman, let's go to our sisters first. If you, as a black woman, come out and you are willing, sorry to say, to bust it open Mm-mm. and to affirm Western norms, Western conceptions of womanhood, Western beauty aesthetics, if you're willing to do that, you will, for whatever reason, find it very easy to get funding versus someone who wants to raise consciousness, someone who wants to expand the conversation, expand the concept of womanhood, of blackness.
Yeah.
Same as a black man. If you want to come out here and act like all of their worst stereotypes, you will find a lot of money out here for you. It will be a lot easier for you to get to have a nice run in the public eye than it will for someone in my position.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the music industry ultimately does a great job of dressing up all of that, using people's talent. We as people have inherent value, and that is evident when it comes to black people, black music, the fact that we can always evolve a new sound, always evolve a new genre in the context of oppression. What that sound is used for is ongoing propaganda. To where by the time I'm a teenager, I'm trying to say to my brethren, yo, listen to what we do with these bars. Listen to our production. Look at what we're doing in the comfort of our own yards without much money. We could probably use this to like organize our community. We could do this. We could refashion like youth clubs to make them all about artist development, all about learning the lore of media. Like, I had these concepts since I was 17, and people always used to push back and self-regulate and tell me that, George, black people don't want that.
Wow.
You see how the trickery works? Yeah. Because our talent is used to push propaganda, the propaganda gets into our system via our talent. So we don't imagine that we can do anything more with our talent other than push propaganda, pushing P.
Pushing P. Ah! That's what I'm naming this episode. I'm naming it Pushing P. No, but that's exactly it. The image I saw is like a snake eating itself. And then it's just like, you're just over and over and over. And it's just like, no, it's always been like this. And it's like, no, it's not. And you can't come out. And, ooh, no, that is absolutely it. You describe it in such a way that we understand now, you know, how you do, you know, the power that you have with words. And talking about the power that you have with words, this was the bit that I was referencing earlier when you've on page 157, might change by the time that you will get the book. It says here, voices. The voice I used to read was different from the voice I used to speak in. To make life easier, I've always tried to merge the two, which isn't straightforward. A regular phrase in one part of my life may not translate in another. And why is that significant? Because this disconnect represents the experience a lot of black people have with Western education in general, especially in language-based subjects. being assessed by Western institutions on your ability to reproduce Western ideas using Western language feels, for many of us, like trying to look natural in someone else's clothes. And at that point, you haven't even finished cooking. You were garnishing. I don't know. It was mere stirring and seasoning still at that point.
Even me, I was like, ooh.
You know when you hear it back, you're like, rah.
Yeah. Oh, bless
I
you,
deserve
man.
The rest I'm taking. I deserve the rest. I wrote bits.
Bless you. Thank you.
No, I thank you because I felt really seen through your experiences. And I think that this is the beauty and it's the power of being able to really interrogate our experiences while having the humility to be like, hey, and I'm still learning, I'm still figuring out, but this is where I'm at currently. I might catch you lot in 7 years and I'll give you something more different. Who knows? But I felt really seen by that specific bit because that's what I felt like othered, like I'm trying to explain an internal experience using the outward sort of like tools that I've been given, but the tools feel very foreign to me. And even what I'm trying to explain would come across as foreign to those who it's been explained to.
Right.
And right. So, yeah, like when you were writing that, what were the visuals that you had that you were pulling from in order to kind of construct that, because it's really powerful?
I think I was trying to give context to the imposter syndrome that I often felt when I was in Cambridge, before that when I was in a grammar school. I felt that my move from my neighborhood to the suburbs, it just for education, you know, I still lived in the neighborhood. That made me feel like maybe in the neighborhood, I was just intellectually a big fish in a small pond because these guys have read mad books. They have been to like all sorts of, what's the word? Erudition, articulacy classes. They've been to debate classes since they were 3 years old. They've been in chess club and all of these, you know, sneaky, but things that I want for my son, things that I like.
It's nice.
I remember thinking like, oof, maybe like the thing that what they're saying about DEI, diversity, equity and inclusion in America, what Elon Musk has been implying, that when you make allowances for marginalized people, doesn't that lower the standard of the space that you are, you know, space that of the institution? So it's a trick of the mind to make you think that because you are not native to this institution, because you don't speak English like these people, there's something in you that isn't really of the same quality. You're not really levels.
You'll taint it.
Yeah. You're just levels to your people. You're bad to your friends, but you're not really like that. So that's the imposter syndrome that I felt, because consistently every exam season, I'm not saying I was, you know, king of the hill, but I was okay. Like I held my own. I did understand what was going on around me. The biggest barrier was this dry ass language that all of these books are written in. So I wanted to like give voice to that, and to anyone that is still struggling with that, because it's a constant thing. You get into the workplace and then you don't know the references that these guys are talking about. You don't want to go to the pub. You don't know everyone. Like, you know when white people would just say someone famous to them, to you?
And you're like...
All of that.
I'll be like, do you know Tonto DK? Since we're throwing out names.
But they'll... Act like you're tweaking. They'll look at you like you're bugging. So all of those things have little psychological effects of reinforcing some kind of lack. And I wanted to give voice to that and just say, listen, man, look at where the insecurity comes from. It comes from never getting a chance to talk about who you are. And considering that that's been done to you, you're doing amazingly to even be able to vibe on this frequency and act like you're comfortable in this environment.
That's a word. That is a word. Now you've, I could just talk to you forever, but I just want you to know, and I'm sure many, many, many people will tell you when this book comes out, 25th of April, everyone. And pre-order now. Don't just wait till 25th of April. Like, get it ASAP so you get it on the day that it comes out. Or sometimes they even send it to you the day before or a couple of days before. But many people will tell you that this is like a seminal piece of work. And I don't know how, you know, the PhD stuff is going, but soon it'll be Dr. George, right? No. You deserve all of the accolades. You deserve all of the things for your integrity more than anything else. Like, smart, we know you've got that. You know, articulate, we know you've got that. But it's in the integrity, the time that you've taken with yourself, the compassion you've shown yourself on your journey of learning, that then translates the compassion that hopefully the reader will show themselves, that, you know, this is where I'm at, and it's obviously not where I'm going to stay, and I'll keep growing. So I wanted to say thank you for that, because I hope that this is in the curriculum and people learn from it.
Sis, thank you so much. Thank you for that personally for me. But another selfish thank you on behalf of a lot of people for being outside, for standing on business, as the young people say. Yeah, and not pushing propaganda, pushing principles. Thank you for constantly showing up and reminding us that it is possible to navigate this environment, this spooky world, with some level of decorum, as you've always had, and some consistency, some ethical consistency. So I appreciate you, and thanks for giving time to my little narrative too.
No, I can't wait. I can't wait. If all the live events, I've got to be there. I want to see this, you know, you getting into more conversations about this, because obviously there are so many chapters and different things and themes that people will pull out. So I'm really interested about the ongoing conversations that are inspired by this amazing piece of work. So track record, can't wait.
Come on. Thank you.
Singing, rapping girl flex, baby girl 2.0. Let's go. Scoffed at my acorn era, didn't think I'd be the oak. So before you assume and talk crud, it's probably best you choke. God's favourite, and the angel's wings is prophesied as my haven. Blessed to serve up what you lot have clearly been craving. It's your tongue, go crazy, but bear this in mind, baby. Raise it on a minus and it has to fall, and that's on God who made me. Powerful on my knees, geez, I mean, I pray with conviction. Ancestral truths flow from me, and yet I've mastered diction. Can you hear them when they sing for me? The ancestors make sure blessings bling for me. Steps guided so I never falter, ever humbled when they meet me at the altar.